Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
Hello and welcome. It's Friday. You're tuned in to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. It's so good to be back with you. I'm going to give you a quick warning. Today, there will be no Theater of the Mind. Beginning next week, we will be back with Theater of the Mind going forward on every Friday show, unless it is a week I'm gone and we're playing all special reruns again. If that's the case, that's what you can expect to hear. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, being a part of our world with us. We've had a great time here, great couple of weeks. I'm so pleased with what Tim was able to do, filling in for me while I was gone. I'm getting great feedback from all of you, so thank you so much for that. Tonight, we've got a good friend of our show and regular guest coming back to join us. Joshua P. Warren is an investigator who pioneers and does these amazing relationships between mind, energy, matter, and strange phenomena. He owns the Asheville Mystery Museum and Laboratory in North Carolina and the Bermuda Triangle Research Base in Puerto Rico. He's the author of over 20 best-selling books, including Use the Force, A Jedi's Guide to the Law of Attraction, and The Wishing Machine Workbook. He's appeared on numerous TV programs on History, Discover, Nat Geo, Animal Planet, Sci-Fi, TLC, and starred on the Travel Channel series Paranormal Paparazzi. He travels the world investigating mysterious phenomena and made the cover of a science journal in 2004 for lab experiments regarding energy fields in nature related to the Brown Mountain Lights. As the creator of the wildly popular Wishing Machine Project, he has helped thousands of people around the world change their lives in profound ways, manifesting extremely good fortune. To see some mind-blowing photos and videos glimpsing into the other realms, we're going to have a link up to his website. You can click on it, joshuapwarren.com. It'll be right on our site, so you can check it out there. It is a pleasure to have you back with me, Joshua. How are you today, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, Dave. Thank you for having me. It's always wonderful to be with you and dig into these strange and fascinating topics.
So you've got the Bermuda Triangle Center out there that you run and operate. What's new? Any new fascinating aspects from the Bermuda Triangle we should be alerted to?
Oh, yeah. This is a big year, actually, for all of us doing research there in the Bermuda Triangle, and that's because of what I have coined, I guess, OUFOs, organic UFOs, that are part of a new video report that I put out earlier this year. Have you seen the video report yet, Dave?
Yes, I have. It's fascinating. As a matter of fact, we'll put up a link to the video so people can check that out. It's crazy, man. And I've heard of some of these things, and I really am interested in this whole organic aspect because, you know, I've mentioned it on the show. I don't know if I've told you the story, but when I was in Trout Lake, Washington at the Yosetti Ranch, the UFO that I saw appeared to be a living creature, if you will. It fluttered across the sky like a stingray swimming across the sky. It glowed blue and it vanished between these trees. And when I spoke to the gentleman that runs the property there, James Gilliland, he informed me that it is, in fact, a half biological, half mechanic craft. That's how it gets between dimensions. It's part organic, like the Terminator, and part machine. And I'd never heard that before. I thought that was just the machinations of science fiction. But he was very adamant that that's how they get through these dimensions and how they're able to traverse the parallel universes, which blew me away.
Well, you know, that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about here, because when we try to define something as organic or inorganic, frequently we are not thinking of it accurately because we think of that more in terms of how humans are structured. You have to realize, however, that if you break a human body down, you find iron and copper and zinc and sulfur and magnesium and all these things that we usually think of as being inanimate, but they're all inside of a human. They're just arranged in a particular way that we're familiar with, but you could have a different arrangement, which is still a living thing, but behaves sometimes in a way that seems a little more like we associate with a machine or a craft. And that's what we found, especially in Puerto Rico, where we have the base. I think it's important to let people listening who haven't heard this before, to let them know that there is this astounding piece of video that was leaked, shot by Homeland Security in Aguadilla, Puerto Rico, with a thermal camera, showing one of these craft, if you will, zipping around the airport and up to 120 miles per hour, dipping in and out of the water, the ocean there. It's finally joined by a second craft that emerges from the water, and then eventually those two dip down one last time and disappear into the ocean right near the deepest part of the Atlantic, the Puerto Rico Trench, which is almost 30,000 feet deep. Now, this is bona fide, authenticated footage that was analyzed in great detail and presented in a 162-page report by a group of mainstream scientists. And this is just one really airtight piece of documentation that these things are real, that they are flying around, and this is not some optical illusion, that this is some type of technology or some type of life form that we're not familiar with. But, of course, one of the things I tried to demonstrate in this video report, which is the product of 4.5 to 5 years' worth of research, that there are all kinds of people in the Bermuda Triangle who are not only capturing images of these types of things flying around, but they are having almost telepathic communications where they can go out and invite these things to appear in one way or another, and they respond. And so what we are dealing with here is an unusual object that's flying around but doesn't look exactly like a structured craft, doesn't have any means of conventional propulsion, and seems to be very sensitive to human thought. And frankly, you can let your imagination run wild a bit, but it kind of looks like when you watch footage of some of these things that they have an almost playful kind of conduct. So ultimately, one thing I tried to demonstrate in my video report was not only that these things may very well be organic, but that there is a long history going back, especially in the islands there like Puerto Rico, of the natives there, specifically the Taino Indians, interacting with these and calling them thousands of years ago Semi, C-E-M-I, or lesser gods, which they actually documented in sculpture. So there's a long, rich history here, and I think that ultimately the case I was trying to present is there to insist that we at least re-examine, re-evaluate, open this whole new discussion about the possibility that these are not just machines with a little man sitting inside at the steering wheel, that some of these things flying around are indeed, as you were saying, Dave, a hybrid between the organic and inorganic. They are OUFOs.
And you mentioned kind of an interesting aspect of this. There's historic precedent for these.
Yeah, well, you know, I was really amazed when I met a man, and you can see him in the video. His name is Daniel Matos Velez, who told me that he is a direct descendant of the Taino Indians. Now, the Tainos were the people that Columbus encountered when he first arrived in Puerto Rico in 1493. And Daniel works as a professional lifeguard on the beach in Boquerón, Puerto Rico, which is on the west coast, same coast where this amazing Homeland Security footage was shot. And Daniel showed me a technique that he would use to go out onto the beach, get into a meditative state, and then basically take his cell phone and just hold it out in front of him, close his eyes, and scan left to right as he is inviting these things to appear. And I'm actually going to share with you, Dave, something that I have not talked about ever before, and you'll see why. He told me this technique, and he was happy to explain, you know, how that has worked effectively for him. But then he told me off camera that there is a symbol that the Taino Indians have used that has been closely protected for generations, and that they carry this symbol with them, and they meditate on this symbol in particular when they want these things to appear. And he shared this symbol with me only if I promised that I would never publicize it. And I gave him my word I would not do that. Maybe someday he will change his mind, but he said this is just for you. And again, Dave, I've never even mentioned this before on any show because I knew as soon as I brought it up, people would start hounding me to reveal this symbol, which I just cannot do because I told him I wouldn't. But I thought it was fascinating that he gave me the symbol. I put it in my wallet. And I started using this when I would go out and try to conduct research. And one thing that you see is that I was able to get some pretty amazing footage of these things zipping around very quickly myself. So that will lead us, I think, later on, perhaps talking more about the role that these symbols and sigils can play. But I do want to just say right up front, I think that it's possible, Dave, that these things that I'm calling OUFOs are zipping around us much more frequently than people realize. It's just that most of the time people are not pointing a camera at the sky, letting it record for a half hour or more, and then sitting down and watching it in slow motion, because that's what it would take, I think, in order to see, because they're moving so quickly in many cases.
For the skeptic nation out there that hears something like that, Joshua, and then they say, well, sure, if you videotape the sky, you're going to get fast-moving birds, things that zip across, and even planes at a certain angle can look very much like the famous cigar-shaped cylindrical UFOs that traverse the sky. And I've seen that myself. I thought I was on the track of an actual UFO, one of those cigar-shaped ones. I was watching it in the sky, and then it wasn't until, and literally I watched this thing for about 5 minutes, that all of a sudden it tipped. And as it tipped, you could see the wings start to show again on the side. And it was just at the just right angle for my perspective that it just looked like a long cylindrical UFO. So how do you answer to the people that are going to say, well, sure, if you review this and in slow motion, we're always missing bugs or large birds that might be booking through the screen real quickly. What are your thoughts on that aspect of this?
Well, what I've done personally is I've gone out to places where there are lots of birds flying around, bird sanctuaries, and I videotape birds. And then I go to places where there are lots of bugs, marshes, and swamps, and I videotape the bugs. Just like when I've been doing ghost research, I go out and I take pictures of snow and rain and fog, and I use all those as controls. And what you find is that after a while, it's relatively easy to see how a bird or an insect looks, not only the way they move, but also we've got such high-definition cameras these days. You can see much more detail than you could, you know, back in, say, the 90s when people were seeing these weird interlacing effects and talking about rods and that sort of stuff. So the technology has helped a lot with that. Plus, I'm using multi-angle filming and 3D filming so you can see things from different perspectives and get a better idea of its actual size and dimensions. But that's one of the great things about this Homeland Security footage. Because this footage was thermal imaging, it's not just a matter of analyzing what's on the screen optically. You also have data there. It shows us that this object was over 100 degrees. It was traveling up to 120 miles per hour. When it entered the water, it skims below the surface of the water at 90 miles per hour and then comes right back out. There's almost no splash when it enters the water, so it's almost like it has some unique ability to transition from one medium to another. And so therefore, there are all these sort of physical characteristics that we can see in that footage, which also help us to analyze this even more deeply and realize that we're not talking about something displaying the characteristics of a bug or any conventional aircraft or a bird.
I'm fascinated by this, and I want to know so much more because I'm starting to wonder from some of the other eyewitness testimony I've heard regarding UFO that some have seen these balls of light or these smaller craft, if you will, and I think people just are more willing to call it a craft, and zipping around prior to larger UFO sightings. And I want to know in just a few seconds here, Joshua, from you, if you believe that maybe it is not a craft at all, but these are interdimensional beings, and this is just what we're seeing. This is they're entering our world, whether it's just as a quick pop by or visit, or do you believe that there is more of a cybernetic connection of craft and biological? And we'll talk about that in just a few minutes, but I got to talk real quickly about this. Established in 2011, BarkBox is committed to making dogs happy. And they work with local and independent businesses to achieve this. If you are a pet owner, and let me tell you, I am. I have a dog. I've got two great cats. And I wanted to find something for my dog. He gets lonely. He gets bored. I wanted to find something that would entertain him and isn't the cheap big box store toys that I can find or the overpriced big box store toys that I could find. So you want to know, what is BarkBox? Well, for those of us humans, BarkBox is a delivery of 4 to 6 natural treats and super fun toys curated around a surprise theme each month. For dogs, BarkBox is like the joy of a million belly scratches. It is the Pandora's box of fun toys. It's stuff that they're allowed to play with and is theirs and theirs alone. You get to choose by many different choices. You get to choose by telling us what size the dog is and tell them how big your dog's bark is. Is it small and cute, which is 0 to 20 pounds, just right, 20 to 50 pounds, or do you have a big and bold fella at about 50 pounds or more? You could choose a plan. 1, 6, or 12-month plans available. And then cancel any time. They do come with free shipping. Currently, I'm on a 6-month plan, and I like that. I do this about every 6-7 months. I'll sign up, do a 6-month plan, then let it go, lapse for 6-7 months, and then come back in. So I give the dog a chance to enjoy the different treats. If I know my dog's hitting it on one, I'll just keep reordering those treats. But you get to choose. Every month, BarkBox paw picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match your dog's unique needs, including any allergies. And if they're a heavy chewer, you've got special preferences for that, too. All the edibles are made right here in the grand old U.S. of A. or in Canada, and are 100% of our products are tested on animals. Our own animals, just so you know. BarkBox is a great way to try a variety of treats and toys from local and small businesses that you may not otherwise be able to find. And each month, the box is themed. Country Fair, Bark Ball, Poo York City, yeah, you heard me, or Brooklyn Hipster. New and unique toys continue to keep dogs engaged, interested, and happy. And Scouts Honor, if your dog does not like something in the box, you just send it back in and they'll send you something that we can find that your dogs will love. And they do it for free because they're all about the happiness of your furry friends. There's free shipping on any BarkBox within the continental United States. And when your dog falls in love with something from the box, you can easily find it again on BarkShop.com or on the app just by texting them. So whether it's your favorite four-legged friend that you have or maybe your grand puppy, you want to buy the right toys, you want to get the right snacks, then there's no reason to look anymore. I love BarkBox. I've been using it for a long time, and I love the different treats. I love the different toys. My dog certainly enjoys it. I'm not going to lie, my cats do too. They like to play with the toys. So here's what we've got going on right now. We have a special link. If you go to BarkBox.com/darkness, that's BarkBox.com/darkness. You get a free extra month of BarkBox. So if you sign up for 1 month, you get an additional month free. If you sign up for 6 months, you get a 7th month free. If you sign up for a year, you get a 13, that's right, lucky number 13 month for free. Visit BarkBox.com/darkness when you subscribe to a 6 or 12 month plan. You've got to check it out for yourself. You are absolutely going to love BarkBox. I do, and so do my pets.
Fantasy football fans, it's the most wonderful time of the year. The wait is nearly over and football is back, which means FanDuel is back. Fantasy football for everyday fans, that is FanDuel. New contests are starting every week. No busted seasons. There's something for everyone and lots of contests for you to choose from. And everything on FanDuel starts at just $1. You can just pick a contest, choose your team, and watch your score in real time. You want Adrian Peterson, why he starts for the New Orleans Saints, you can have Adrian Peterson. You want Odell Beckham Jr., you can have Odell Beckham Jr. You can have whoever you want on your team, choose them, pick your contest, watch your score in real time, have the team you want week to week, and if it's not working for you, switch it up. That's the great thing about FanDuel. Every game becomes more and more exciting as you play. And get the players you like for this season in week one. Dave and I are putting together a team this season on FanDuel, and we're looking to have some fun as well. We're going to have some interesting picks. Be sure to check us out on our FanDuel page, too, because I tell you, although neither one of us are really good at this thing, we're going to give it a shot. I'll give you an idea of how good exactly I was last year at fantasy football. I'll give you two words. My big back last year, Adrian Peterson. And my other two words, huge bust. This year, I'm hoping to do a little bit better. This year, I'm actually going to take a little jump, and I'm going to go with a dark horse here. I'm going to take Dalvin Cook from the Minnesota Vikings, because believe it or not, I think Dalvin may have a pretty big season. I think just kind of watching him in preseason, I think he's showing little flashes. So I think Dalvin Cook may be a dark horse. So I'm going to play Dalvin Cook over at FanDuel this year. That's what I'm going to do. Over 2.5 million players have won a cash prize playing fantasy sports on FanDuel. You can do it too. Make sure you sign up today. Go to FanDuel.com, click the Join Now button, and use our code BEYOND. Again, Join Now button, use the code BEYOND. New users get free entry into the NFL Sunday Million with over $1 million in cash prizes when you make your first deposit on FanDuel. Just visit FanDuel.com and sign up with the promo code BEYOND. That's FanDuel.com and promo code BEYOND. Void where prohibited.
Joshua P. Warren, this is fascinating. Do you believe that maybe these are beings as opposed to a craft, you know, the flying saucers that we've always been captivated and believed may exist? Is there a possibility that these are living, breathing creatures?
I believe so. And I think there are probably lots of, you know, odd things flying around out there. And so I'm not saying that everything that has ever been called a UFO is one of these. because, you know, we see all, you know, things that do look a lot more mechanical. And it becomes even more confusing these days because we know that the military is working on secret technology all the time, which may be inspired by some of these more exotic craft, but are difficult to distinguish from those. But when it comes to these what I call OUFOs, they tend to almost have an irregular and often shape-shifting kind of an appearance.
Right. And this again, you know, I was joking around about the whole Cyberdyne and Skynet Terminator deal of the blending and meshing of human and biological form, but almost in the vein of Terminator 2, where you've got the more advanced robot that has that liquid form. Some of these UFOs, and especially that one that they caught on Homeland Security, there are a few points in that video, Josh, where this thing is flying, and it appears to take on slightly different forms as it's moving through the sky.
Yeah, and I think that would be one of the logical evolutions that, you know, as time goes on, a creature would become more and more able to adapt to transferring from one type of element to another in its environment. It may actually be that instead of viewing ourselves as the Earthlings with these beings visiting us, that they could actually be the original Earthlings, and that they are even better adapted to this environment than even we are. I mean, frankly, humans are kind of clumsy creatures. And so these creatures may be able to literally in a millisecond change their form so that when, as I mentioned, this thing enters the water, there's almost no resistance because it shifts on a molecular basis in order to seamlessly transition in and out. And we have not gotten that far, but if you just look at how we are developing rather slowly, really, when it comes to our technology in terms of morphing humans into that machine hybrid, you have to think of this realistically. Humans were once naked. And then they started putting on clothes. So now that's the first layer of sort of morphing yourself into something that's artificial. And then now, like, I wear glasses all the time. I mean, my glasses feel like a part of my body. And so this is another little piece of technology I have on. And now you have people glued to their cell phones in one way or another. That's very quickly going to be morphed into some kind of miniature thing. It's already happening, you know, with people wearing a wristwatch or the Google glasses. So as time goes on, we are becoming more and more comfortable integrating this sort of biological form with these things we consider inanimate. Now, if you can fast forward into, I don't know, we'll say a few hundred years or maybe a thousand years into the future, it very well may be that we will see that we are literally cyborgs. And if you can imagine a million years into the future, if these things are, say, that much more advanced or that much older, what we might be able to see is something that merges the elements of the universe together so well, so efficiently, that it really does become something which possesses this mysterious thing we call consciousness and life. But at the same time, it has a lot of these advantages that we associate with technology. And so this could be the most advanced form of life that we've seen. And it also, Dave, might not exist 100% within this dimension. It might exist on the boundary of what we consider the physical plane and other planes, which might also explain why that we don't find dead ones lying around all over the place, or they also seem to not be as affected by the physical constraints of this particular environment.
So unbelievable. I mean, it keeps opening these possibilities from what we thought were just aliens from other planets possibly visiting us here on Earth to the possibility that these are the actual natural inhabitants of our planet. Or future evolutions of life forms, alternative life forms from other realities and parallel universes. I think that's why I find this field so fascinating, and I'm sure you do too, Joshua. We've talked a lot. It's just amazing how this is always an evolving field. And when you start to think you understand what's going on, the paradigm shifts, the sands slip, and it starts to a whole new series of questions and investigation.
Well, you know, there was this author, I'm sure some of your listeners have thought of this, named Trevor J. Constable, who in the 1950s and 60s popularized this idea of what he called critters. And these were essentially a similar type of thing. He believed that there were these huge, often huge, amoeba-like things, life forms that would float around in the upper atmosphere and were visible in the infrared realm. And he had some pretty interesting pictures that he claimed showed these things. And his idea was that back, you know, millions if not billions of years ago, when Earth was supposedly just forming, and before cells became the tangible things that we know them to be today, they existed almost like gaseous bubbles, little clusters of electrical particles. And he believed that the earliest forms of life may have branched off into this other division of these, you know, large, again, kind of almost gaseous plasma-like beings that sort of float around in the sky. And what we're talking about here is different than that, but it's certainly related to the possibility. And, you know, it's one thing, of course, to talk about all this stuff in theory or to look at some type of a black and white still photograph, but when you have stuff like this Homeland Security footage, and by the way, nobody that I have met who has looked at this doubts the authenticity of the footage. And I can even tell you personally, I was in Puerto Rico when this was shot, and everybody on the island knew that something had been filmed because it's an island and everybody kind of knows everybody in one way or another, and word got out fast that this had been filmed at the Homeland Security office there in Aguadilla. When you look at that footage and you realize that this is one of the best, most expensive cameras in the world, operated by experts who do this every single day, with all of this data available right there on the screen, I don't know how much more solid the evidence can be than that. And, you know, people who were who lived in the area for nights prior to that said that they would look up in the sky and they would see these red lights flying around in the sky. And in fact, there was one resident named Michael Rios, who I know very well, who went out and took video footage and pictures of the red lights. So to the naked eye, this might just appear as a red light in the sky. But thanks to the thermal imaging, we're able to see that greater level of detail. And it may be that for decades, people have seen weird lights in the sky, but they've only been able to perceive this very tiny sliver of what is actually there. And this footage shows us what's there. And if you consider also that these things have such a weird shape, and yet I was able to find examples of the ancient Tainos depicting these weird shapes thousands of years ago and calling them lesser gods that come from the sky that they worshipped, I wondered, well, how did the ancient Tainos know what they look like? How did they perceive them?
Right.
And I found it intriguing that they had priests back then, medicine men, if you will, who would practice what they called the cahoba. And these medicine men would go and they would take beans or seeds from what is called the cohabana tree, and they would crush them up. And essentially, they would snort them in a special ceremony, and they'd get very sick, but they would have these incredible visions. And it's very possible, and I'm trying to find people right now who actually are willing to do this ritual to see how they perceive the world, but it's possible that one of the reasons they were able to perceive things is that it slowed down the rate at which they were able to observe the passing of time. So it'd be kind of like taking a camera and shooting something at a high shutter speed versus a low shutter speed, so you get to see more detail. And a lot of those medicine men were the ones who had the ability to see these things. And also, you know, in the video, I point out that we're not just talking about the Bermuda Triangle. I mean, there's some stuff happening in Denver, Colorado that looks very similar to this, which has also been featured in the mainstream news there, the TV news. And so that's why I think it's important for anybody listening who wants to experiment with this themselves to just get whatever camera you have access to, take it outside, point it at the sky, and don't point it directly at the sun because it could damage your camera. And just let it run for just 5 minutes. But the important thing is for you to sit down and have the patience to watch it run for 5 minutes, and then you may see some of these things that clearly are not bugs, are not birds. And I think having that intention counts for a lot. And obviously, Dave, when it comes to the symbol and the meditation that the Tainos were using, this shows us a lot about how we can connect the mind with the environment when it comes to trying to attract these things, which really leads me also into this other field of study that we can get into if you'd like today, called paracymatics. Are you interested in that subject, Dave?
I am. I'd love to talk to you about all of this. Before we jump into the paracymatics, though, let me ask you, with the idea of these craft and the possibilities and ways to see them, you brought up an interesting aspect of setting up the camera, running the film. Don't point it at the sun. I need to get your opinion on this because I am being inundated by emails of people who, during the eclipse, ran video of the eclipse, and they picked up what they think is Nibiru, the planet X, or something up in the sky. In most cases, to me, it appears to be nothing more than light refraction or reflection from the solar anomaly that was going on with the eclipse. What are you weighing on this? I'm sure you're being shown tons of these pictures as well. Do you see them as legitimately proving that there's something else up there, or are you just seeing a bunch of misidentified camera flaws?
Well, fortuitously, I ended up being in Greenville, South Carolina for the eclipse, and so I was in 100% totality. There was a crystal clear sky, and not only did I have a fantastic view and a wonderful experience, But my friend and business partner, C. Eric Scott, came down from Washington, D.C., and he had an extremely elaborate professional camera rig. He actually had about five or six cameras. And we had a whole vacant parking lot to ourselves, and he had every type of camera you can imagine focused on this with monitors everywhere. And, I mean, I probably was able to see the eclipse in better detail than just about anybody. And so that said, I, having reviewed his footage and having looked at things floating around on the internet and what other people are sending guys like ourselves, I don't think that there is any reason to believe that there is some rogue planet that's on its way here, or some kind of asteroid or anything like that. I think it's easy to let our imaginations run wild. There's been a lot of conspiracy this whole time about the eclipse. People saying don't even look up there because there's some kind of mind control beam that's going to wipe your brain and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, the eclipse was, I think, a good reminder of how that something natural would have been paranormal at one point in time, because I guarantee you, if I lived a few thousand years ago and didn't know what was happening and saw that, I would think something very paranormal was occurring.
Right.
But from this modern day and age standpoint, and my own experience and what we recorded and what we watched, I've seen no evidence that there is anything that was revealed by that eclipse. Now, I believe that a lot of people would have gotten UFOs and OUFOs that day if they had been pointing their camera just at the sky. But that's the thing. Usually when people are pointing their camera up, they're directing it towards something. And it's not so often that you just go out there and just get a big, broad piece of the sky and then go back and watch it later in slow motion.
Many people that have encountered different craft like this claim to have made telepathic communication.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, I have a hard time because I would be questioning constantly, is this just my imagination running wild? How do I know that I'm legitimately communicating with these craft? Do you think, first and foremost, should we even be trying to telepathically communicate, not knowing who it is we're speaking to or what their capabilities are? And two, if we do try to make this communication, are there safety protocols we should put in place in doing so?
Well, you know, I tend to think that the bottom line is, if any of these things that we're looking at, which have these extraordinary qualities that seem to be so advanced we can't fully understand them, have some type of ill will toward us, then they would go ahead and harm us as they saw fit. So I don't think that we are in a position to really either enhance or detract from their ability and motivation. So I don't worry too much about that. I think if the day comes when we wake up and, it's the Independence Day scenario and suddenly the warships have moved in around the world, oh, well, you know, we knew that was probably going to happen one of these days. But, you know, and then there's probably not going to be anything we can do about it then. So for now, these things flying around, if they indeed are able to if they are able to perceive human thought forms so well, then that means they are sympathetic to the human mind in some way. And the only reason they have evolved to become sympathetic to the human mind is that they have some kind of I think a harmonious relationship with humans. I mean, it's easy for us to talk about all the bad things that these could do to us, but we'll never know how many bad things may have happened to us that were prevented by these things, possibly. That's why you have people talking about this huge surge in UFO activity right after we started detonating nuclear weapons, that could have been a big red flag. Uh-oh, you know, the apes down there are about to kill themselves, right? and so there's probably more evidence to think when you look at how ill-informed and how sort of reckless humans are, there's probably more evidence to think they may actually have helped us get to this stage. So I don't worry about communicating with them. Now, look, if I were one of those guys who woke up in the middle of the night and they're standing in my bedroom with the probe and all that, I would probably have a very different opinion of this on this subject. But I've not had that experience. I've never seen any good footage of that happening, and so I tend to think that the overwhelming majority of these things are peaceful and maybe even just don't even take humans that seriously or take us so seriously that they help preserve us.
Parasemetics, that's what we'll cover next when we return to the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Beyond the Darkness.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that those strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmlands tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from
beyond the darkness.
And we're back. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Tim and I will be back next Monday with a brand new, brand spanking fun, supernatural news and parashare. So make sure you tune in for that. Have a great, long, safe holiday weekend. Be kind to one another. Love one another. It's going to be a good weekend. I've got crazy stuff going on in my life I will be catching you guys up on soon. And we'll talk about that on parashare. I've been telling you guys for a while, I've been waiting for a sign from my mother. And I think I got it. And boy, was it a big sign. So we'll be talking about that Monday and so much more. Right now, our good friend, researcher, investigator, author, Joshua P. Warren is on the phone with us. We're talking about OUFOs and something you've coined the phrase parasemetics. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, parasymatics.
Cymatics. Okay. Walk me through this. What is the introduction to parasymatics?
Yeah, because I know at first people might say, okay, well, we're talking about UFOs 1 minute, and now we're getting into this other thing with weird symbols. What's the connection? There's right. Actually a perfect connection. It dovetails beautifully. So when it comes to the OUFOs, you know, we've been talking about how that there is this mystery regarding how these humans might be able to telepathically communicate. And I have this Taino man who gives me this symbol, which he says is the symbol that's almost like the antenna that attracts them. And I don't know exactly how to make sense of that at first, but I start using it and I start having success myself. Well, that reminds me of my investigation in 2010 of Robert the Haunted Doll down in Key West, Florida. Now, I don't want to go over the whole story of Robert. I think your listeners probably know it fairly well. He's a cursed little doll that sits under a glass case at the East Fort Martello Museum there in Key West. And in 2010, I went down to investigate him and do a series of reports for Coast to Coast AM. Well, as it turns out, I did the first really thorough investigation of him in years, because the staff there told me that the glass case around Robert had not been removed in at least 4 or 5 years. And so the powers that be were kind enough to have a couple of fellas come out with suction cups and lift that case off of him so that I could study him directly. Now, one thing I did right off the bat was shine a UV light on him, because glass blocks out most UV light, which is why you don't get a sunburn when you're driving down the road through your car window. So I shined this UV light on Robert, and when I did that, boom, immediately the symbol appeared on his sleeve, which was otherwise invisible. It was a weird-looking little symbol. It kind of reminded me of a distorted snowflake. And I took a lot of pictures of it and made very careful note of it. Of course, on my website, joshuapwarren.com, I have a book you can download called Don't Play with Robert, the World's Most Haunted Doll, and you can see pictures of this. And the rumor had always been that Robert was modified by some type of a voodoo practitioner in the early 1900s who was using this doll to gain vengeance on a family that she worked for. So I wondered if this could be some kind of a magical symbol that somebody had put on this sleeve. So sure enough, I started doing research and I discovered this whole world of what they call sigils. So basically, sigils are indeed like the final stamp that a magician or a ritualist will put on an object that has been charged with energy. So it's usually an abstract-looking thing because we're not talking about something that can be strictly defined in conventional language. And so ultimately, the idea behind the sigil is that the energy that the person is putting into the ritual is symbolized with this pattern, and it works both ways. If you come into contact with that pattern, then you expose yourself to that energy. So I became so fascinated with the idea that here we have a lot of people in this magical tradition using these things. I wanted to experiment with them and find out what might be happening here. How is this related to the human mind? Is this making sense so far, Dave?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, good. So I started reading about this scientist, a German scientist who lived in the late 1700s, early 1800s, named Ernst Chladni. And Chladni would take these big, thin plates of metal and sprinkle sand or salt on top of them, and then he would strike a violin bow down the edge, and the tone would make the sand snap into all of these beautiful patterns. And you can do this today easily by taking a tray or something, a metal tray with sand, and putting it over top of an audio speaker and playing different audio tones. And you'll see all these little patterns that snap into place. It's called cymatics. And one of the cool things is that it works also three-dimensionally. So if you put, say, a bowl of water or some type of a semi-liquid substance like cornstarch and water over top of a speaker and play different tones, you will not only see these patterns, but these patterns actually rise up into all of these amazing range-like forms that kind of move around. And it shows you there's some point at which this invisible vibration creates the mold that this physical stuff will conform to. So I figured, well, I'm going to do some experiments in my lab, and I'm going to see if I can create some of these symbols that might look similar to the ones that people have used to attract UFOs or to produce some kind of ghostly effect like we have around Robert the Doll. Being that I was in the Bermuda Triangle at that time, I was experimenting with a lot of water, both salt water and fresh water, and I started taking different tones and playing them underneath containers of water, and then I would shine different types of light onto the surface of the water so that different attributes of the pattern would be more apparent. So I would shine infrared light and take pictures, and then ultraviolet light and take pictures, and then laser lights and take pictures. And I discovered that not only would I get these amazing patterns, but that they would show up with slightly different nuances, you know, depending on the light you were using to view them. And I wondered, what if instead of just playing patterns, I actually start taking messages and I imbue those tones that I'm playing with these messages to see what patterns are created. So the first thing I did is I sat down, I took a microphone, and I recorded my voice saying, "I want to attract a ghost." And then I wove that with a tone. I played it, got a nice, beautiful, weird-looking pattern there on the water, photographed it, and turned it into a symbol. So now, this is something that I didn't create, basically. Mother Nature created it. I just provided the source material. So that particular night, my wife, Lauren, went to bed, and unbeknownst to her, I walked upstairs, and I took this little sigil, and I put it on the bedroom door. And I went back downstairs. It was one of those nights where I was going to be up all night. I'm watching a movie about 4:30 in the morning. And Lauren, who's usually a very sound sleeper, comes walking down the steps and says, "Hey, have you been in the bedroom?" I said, "No." And she said, "Well, this place must be haunted then, because something keeps shoving me and waking me up, and it's freaking me out." I said, "Are you serious?" She said, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Yes!" You know, I'm absolutely ecstatic. She is not as into the paranormal as I am. You probably know this, Dave.
Yes.
So she was not nearly as happy about what had happened here. So I told her what had happened, and I said, "Okay, I'm not going to do that anymore." So I removed that sigil. But now I'm really excited, you know. So I spent the next few days creating all of these different types of sigils, different patterns for different things. I produce one for I want to have more vivid psychic experiences, and I put that in my bedroom under my pillow. And I had a dream that night that my neighbors were moving out, and I have no reason to believe that whatsoever. And the next day, I go outside, and here I see my neighbors hauling couches and chairs out, and sure enough, they were moving. Again, I'm absolutely astounded. I continue making these sigils. I made a bunch for different things. Not all of it's spooky, creepy stuff. Some of it is I want to have good luck, or I want to have well-being, or I want to attract more money, or whatever. Similar to what we do with the wishing machines and the radionic boxes. And then I started telling people, look, use this. This is just an experiment. You take one of these things, put it somewhere in your house, look at it throughout your day, and let me know what your experiences are. Let me know what happens. And I can tell you now, Dave, that after a few months, I've probably gotten more feedback regarding this than anything else in my entire life. I put all these things, they're freely available on my website. Doesn't cost you a penny. This is not some money-making scheme. If you go to my website and you scroll down the homepage, you'll see some of these sigils. And if you click a link there, it brings up a whole page that shows you video of how I make them and this whole process with all these different options. And I believe that this field, which I'm now calling paracymatics, which is using cymatics to create extraordinary results, may help us understand why that magical practitioners and people who have been looking into other dimensions and realms have felt that symbols were so important, and how that there is actually a real point of interface there between our intention and what Mother Nature is able to produce that gives us a representation of these other places and energy forms.
All right, now you've got my attention on something intriguing, especially talking about Mother Nature and intention with the natural forms. Now that you've done this, can we back engineer it? Can you create a player that can play back the sigils? And in that case, could we try to de-evolve a crop circle to see what the message is? If your vocal intonations are saying, "I want a ghost to visit me in my house," and you're freezing that frame in time and sending out that message to the ether, the universe, whatever, that has a pattern and a look to it, it should then be able to deconstruct. Can we do that with these earth patterns, these crop circles that are not man-made ones, but the other ones? Could we find what's drawing that? And, you know, I wouldn't even be opposed to the idea of going after the ones that have been human made, because yes, the humans are doing it, but could it be a part of a grander scale scheme they're not even aware of? They're picking these geometric patterns. Maybe there's more to it. Maybe there's a message in what they're posting without them even realizing they're posting it.
You know, Dave, this is one of the reasons that I admire you most, because you are the first person to understand that this could be back engineered. You're exactly right. This is the possible key to understanding so many things, not only in nature, but in the magical world, in the world of symbolism, that have been like gibberish to us at this point. And to help listeners understand what you and I are talking about, it reminds me of Edison and the phonograph. You know, Edison was taking sounds, essentially, and condensing them down to a needle that was just making a pattern of grooves in a wax cylinder. And so if you didn't know what was going on, and somebody handed you that wax cylinder and said, "What's the message here?" you would have no clue what was going on. You say, I have a piece of wax. It's got some grooves in it. That's it. There's nothing else here. But you take that piece of wax, you put it onto the player, you reverse the process. Now the needle is working as the receiver, and it starts to speak to you. And that's how you get sound recorded. And that is what blew people's minds in the 1800s.
Right.
This could be exactly the same thing. Like you're saying, if I'm able to take this process of paracymatics, take these tones and create these patterns, and then figure out a definitive way to take patterns, plug them in, and energize them so that they create a tone, that should be the first step. Now, as you were just suggesting, Dave, it's a lot more complicated, and if you're going to include different periods of time, different languages, different cultures, different circumstances. I mean, this is a much more complex endeavor because, you know, you're talking about taking all kinds of magical symbols and sigils that potentially go back thousands of years, and you might get something out of it, but you don't even still know what it is. But at least you're one step closer to having something you could take to a specialist in that culture or in that language and say, does this mean something to you? So that's why I think this field of paracymatics is so appealing and so astonishing, and that's because that it has been difficult for people to understand why that a symbol may have physical power, but this actually shows us why symbols do have physical power and how that they can affect the world and how that energy that affects the world can be represented in an organic symbol.
I don't know if you're familiar with this, but I'm going to need to connect you with Bill Chappell, the engineer. He had theorized a few years back about scanning photographs for EVP, electronic voice phenomena. He believed that it may, that a photograph may be picking up many spectrums of information that we aren't even aware of. And he had some really interesting results in what he was getting, Josh. But I think by combining your efforts, you guys may find the record player to play the history of our world back to us. I mean, there's, I know that sounds strange, but he has gotten some really fascinating results from scanning the pictures and pulling out audio files from them. And who would have thought you could pull out audio from a visual form? But like Wow. You're saying, why wouldn't it? Because the audio form of the thumping of the drums or the flute that caused the sand on the drum top to create these patterns, it's being affected by the sound. So it should theoretically work in reverse. So it would be fascinating to have you two connect on doing some of this research and kick some ideas around. He may already have some different avenues for you to start approaching on this, but I find that really exciting. And again, I know this is science fiction, but it was based on a true belief and principle. There's that episode, and I think it's X-Files. I want to say it was X-Files, where they talk about this piece of pottery that was being thrown at the time of Christ's crucifixion or something. And that they believe that while this pottery was being grooved, and it was actually recording, kind of like the stone tape theory. And they were able to play it back, and you could hear the moaning or the cries of the people there. So it's you know, and I know that was based on theory, but there it is again, playing the fact that if things do record, and we know that these residual hauntings, these time loop and stone tape hauntings seem to be a recorded image, sound, and, you know, a three-dimensional being, you know, in one sense or another, playing them back is the part that's hard. I hear about residual hauntings all the time. You know, the old widow who's seen climbing the stairs with the lantern and the lights go on and she's looking for her husband, and it happens every year on the year of his death. And I go there and it never happens. I never see the residuals in effect. But is it because I'm using the wrong player?
Yeah, I think that is a great example because I have always felt that the holy grail of ghost research is understanding this process, this mechanism by which things which happen somehow are recorded in the environment. And that if we understand that process, we someday may be able to create a machine similar to a camera that you can use to look back in time, that instead of tuning through different channels, you're tuning back through days, years, and that if we actually created something like that.
Well, wasn't that the idea behind the chronovisor?
The chronovisor? I'm not sure about that one. What is that?
While you're talking, I'm going to look it back up because I want to make sure I mention it correctly. It was developed by a religious man, and I'm trying to remember the name, the damn thing on it. Chronovisor.
It sounds like a cool term, though. It makes sense. Yeah, you're looking back through time. And because think, if you had a machine that could actually do that, it would revolutionize our entire lives. For one thing, we would know how history actually occurred. And right. So that would change the way we view our judgment on what's right and wrong. It would change our identity, our self-identity, because it would change the way that we understood where we came from. And also, it would give us exposure to fantastic technologies that may have been lost. I mean, imagine if you could go back and read some of the books at the library at Alexandria that was destroyed. But the downside is it would also be a terrible violation of privacy because anybody could look back and see what you did yesterday in the bathroom.
There's always going to be some downfalls, but you know, yeah. I've hypothesized for years that I believe that a lot of UFO sightings are nothing more than our future historians coming back to lay witness and bear witness to what actually took place. Most of what we know in history is a skewed perspective. It's his story, right? It's usually the story of the winner of this moment in time and their skewed perspective of how it happened and went down. I often wonder if it's not just our own future fascination reviewing the past and bearing witness to this to record it so that in the future we have a true identity for what really occurred in history. And real quickly, the chronovisor was allegedly a functioning time viewing apparatus described by Father Francois Brun in his 2002 book, Les Nouveaux Mysteries du Vatican, which is, I'm sorry, my accent sucks on that, basically is the Vatican's new mystery. He's the author of several books on the paranormal and religion, and it says that in the early 60s, Father Ernetti began to study the writings of Francois Brun, himself a Roman Catholic priest and author. Ernetti allegedly ended up having Father Brun construct the machine as members of a team which included 12 world-famous scientists. He identified two of them as Enrico Fermi and Werner von Braun. The chronovisor was described as a large cabinet with a cathode ray tube for viewing the received events as a series of buttons, levers, and other controls for selecting the time and location to be viewed. It could also locate and track specific individuals. Like you were just saying, that could be the downfall. According to its inventor, it worked by receiving, decoding, and reproducing the electromagnetic radiation left behind from past events. It could also pick up the audio component or sound waves emitted by some of these same events.
Well, you see, if that's out there, then it would make sense that that would be the most valuable thing I can imagine, other than a machine that can see the future. I mean, because if you can see the future, then, you know, you've got everything at your disposal. You can have whatever you want.
Right.
But being able to see the past is pretty darn good as well. And I have not heard about this particular device, but I did actually a couple years ago meet with a man who is a radionics practitioner who was fascinated by the wishing machines, who told me that there was a case of a guy who had created a time camera using radionics technology, and that he actually was able to get a photograph of his wedding 2 weeks before it occurred. So I have heard about that, you know, it being applied to radionically, but that almost makes you think that perhaps there could be a psychic component, because as we know, wishing machines are mind-powered devices. And if indeed we're talking about something more physical, like with this chronovisor technology, then, you know, obviously if we could go back and see what happened at any point in time, that in and of itself would be astounding. But if you could go back in time, as you were just mentioning, as perhaps some of these UFOs are doing, that would explain why that they are never going to be able to interact with us, because they would inevitably change the timeline. And they might be playing with fire as is, just by getting as close to us as they are. But, you know, Dave, I wrote a book in 2008 called The Secret Wisdom of Kukulcan, in which I explored what I called the paratemporal loop hypothesis, which essentially means that if ever, 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 ever in the entire future it's going to be possible for any species to travel back in time, then we must assume that they will do it. And that they at some, and whether they're authorized to or not, somebody will do it, and they'll go back and they'll try to manipulate the past and tweak it so that things will turn out in their favor in the future. And if it's possible for one species to do it, well, then there may be a million species that are doing it. And again, it creates these weird loops which might adjust the experience we have on a day-to-day basis. So in other words, it's like what people often call now the Mandela effect,
right?
Yeah. That one day something exists and the next day it doesn't, and then it exists. Somebody's dead one day and then the next day they're alive. Bigfoot exists today, tomorrow he doesn't. UFOs are flying around this moment, in an hour they're not. So that might explain, you know, why that we have these weird inconsistencies in perception as we experience this thing called the flow of time. And we may be – it might sound like we're getting off a little bit on a tangent here, but actually if all this is possible, Dave, then the very first step you would think would be exactly what you were talking about, learning how to decode the information in the environment so that you can see what's happening in the past, because that's the first stage of learning to control your access to the timeline.
And that's not going off on a tangent, but this is, hey, my Army of Darkness, they are now casting nationwide for a brand new TV series. It'll be airing on a major network. It is a signed and locked deal. They're looking for eyewitness accounts of real paranormal experiences for a TV show on a major network. If you've had firsthand experience with ghosts, aliens, cryptids, or other disputed entities, voodoo, strange anomalies, they want to hear about it. All you have to do is go check my Facebook page for links or email me, dave@darknessradio.com. That's dave@darknessradio.com. I'll send you the link. They need these stories ASAP. They are currently in full swing production and they're looking for that. So again, if you want your big shot to be on a TV series where they feature you for the entire hour talking about your real firsthand accounts with ghosts, aliens, cryptids, or other paranormal phenomena, email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I will make sure to get that put out and made available to you so that you can go ahead and do it. But as soon as you get the email back from me, please respond and give them the information so they can get you into part of the cycle. And hey, I want to mention too real quickly, TrueCar is doing remarkable things. A lot of people don't even know about TrueCar yet, even though we've been talking about it on our show for 9 months. I still find people on a regular basis that are friends of mine looking for cars, looking to get the new vehicle, and feeling intimidated or overwhelmed by the whole purchasing process. I tell them about TrueCar and their lives have changed. It's helped change Tim's life. It's going to change my life when I go make my purchase with my son as he rapidly approaches his 16th birthday and we're looking for a car. In fact, they have 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide right now. So whether you're looking to buy a new or previously used vehicle, you can get upfront pricing, information, and more that empowers you. Discounts off the list price for used cars and a better buying experience through the True Car Certified Dealer Network. Again, there's over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available right now through True Car Certified Dealers. You'll also see what other people paid for the car you want, so you can know what a fair price is and feel confident. With True Car, you can connect with the local certified dealer of your choosing, so you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. Using True Car, you can easily find the new or used vehicle you want. Don't wait anymore. They've got over 3 million cars that have already been sold through True Car. When you're in the market to buy a new or previously owned vehicle, check out TrueCar.com. True Car, TRUECAR, and I promise you will enjoy a more confident car buying experience. And check this out, if that's not enough to have inspired you, the average savings is around $3,000 off the manufacturer's suggested retail price by using True Car. Did you just hear me? $3,000. That could be a couple mortgage payments. That could be a trip to Aruba. Take advantage of it. Get it right now while you can. Go through True Car when you're ready to make your next purchase. This is exciting stuff, Josh. The aspects of the paranormal like this, and that we can look at these images, at these ancient designs, and perhaps glean even more information that was left behind as a record for us. We might just be, in a sense, catching up to the intelligence and the science of history that was maybe in a way much more advanced than we ever give them credit for. I'm actually going to talk to Bill Chappell now and see if he can run his software on some of these new photographs of crop circles to see if a message or an image like that, if they're getting any kind of information from it. I will keep you abreast of it, and maybe we'll have both of you on and share some of these findings.
I would absolutely love that. And, you know, Bill does, as you know, just fantastic, groundbreaking work. And I don't know if he's aware of the paracymatics work yet, but let's make sure he gets a link to that. Because, like you said, putting our heads together, we might all be able to come up with some type of a device that is revolutionary. And I feel like also one of the great things about the approach we're taking here is that we are not being so fixated on the external world, so to speak. We're taking into consideration the idea of the invisible, the intuitive, the mental, because what we find is that, you know, there was this period of time when the scientific method was born, when everything was reduced down to material cause and effect. And that's the way it was for a long time, and it seemed to be working fairly well. And then we had the quantum physicist who came along and turned all that on its head. And to this day, you know, you have scientists out there who they're all scientists, but they have a very different outlook on life. For example, an archaeologist has a very different day than a quantum physicist has, and or a chemist has. They're all scientists, but they specialize in very different, you know, bits of knowledge. And we're just now coming to the point where we're coming back around full circle, that we've been focused on breaking down the physical elements of reality into all these little bits and pieces. And we're getting back to the point where we realize, okay, when you get all the way down to the atomic and subatomic level, these atoms and subatomic particles start looking like a human consciousness again. They start retrieving information from some unknown source. It's like you and I talking to each other right now. Where is this coming from? You know, I crack open your head, you crack open my head. There's a little lump of flesh in there, but where are the memories? Where are the images? It's like the caveman opening the TV and looking for the little people inside. And we've been neglecting that for a long time. And so I think we're ready now to say, all right, we've made it far enough. understanding how electrons work and how to minimize technology and really examine the delicacy of, again, the quantum and subatomic world. And we're realizing that now, if we're to continue, we have to go back to what philosophers and mystics and spiritual teachers were giving us going back thousands of years ago and re-examine that stuff compared to what we know about the physical world, and then find best we can where that connection is. And the only way that we are going to be able to create some type of a device that can see the past, see the future, is by understanding how the human brain can do that. Because when you remember what you had for lunch yesterday, you're mentally traveling into the past. When you see some premonition of, you know, what's going to happen next week, well, you are mentally traveling into the future. The mind can do this stuff already, but it just happens on a sporadic, inconsistent basis. If we apply a standard of machinery and technology to this, we'll be able to do it every time. And that, oh boy, it's like a Philip K. Dick sci-fi, you know, novel slash movie. There are lots of unexplored implications, but that's where we're heading.
And that's what science wants, repeatable data, a way to scientifically look at and break down and give them the information they need. This is really an exciting thought, and I always love when we can open up new thoughts and ideas like this. And I know none of this is really new, but it's piecing all the little pieces together, creating a much bigger tapestry that will be, the next big move and breakthrough to help us communicate and understand what these images are. The EVPs, you know, boy, Josh, you've got my brain just running. When we're doing these EVP recordings now, it will be fascinating to me when we collect these EVP to run them through your system and see what the pattern is that emerges. And can we figure out a way, you know, Bill Chappell created something called the REVP, the reverse EVP. If we believe that the messages are coming through a magnetic force through the EM field, then what he's done is he's taken a transmitter, basically, and you plug it into the speaker port on your recorder. And you can record your questions in advance, you know, what's your name, what year is it, where do you live, you know, any of that. And when you push play, instead of broadcasting it so that it can be heard, it's broadcasting it only into the electromagnetic field. So the idea is, if that's where their transmissions are coming from, if we can linearly direct the message back into that field, right, into the magnetic field, our chances would be better. And I know in some instances we've gotten really clear EVP. We've especially going in and playing trigger music, playing music that's out of time and date very loudly and broadcasting it into that field. We've had some really loud, obnoxious responses. And in another way, playing it back and recording and picking up voices of the spirits singing along or interacting with the music.
Well, that's why it's so important for all of us to realize that according to the most brilliant mathematicians out there and physicists, there are at least 10 or 11 different dimensions. For all I know, there may be an infinite amount of dimensions, because, you know, I'm fond of reminding folks that the most brilliant scientists out there, the astrophysicists and cosmologists with the biggest budgets and the best toys, they look out there and they measure everything and they tell us that over 95% of what they can observe is what they call either dark matter or dark energy, which is defined by the very fact that we have no clue what it is. Therefore, if we are just occupying a tiny sliver of the spectrum of things that are out there, then we have got to open our minds more and sort of try to step out of this egocentric view that humans are the dominant intellectual power here. And again, this gets a little more philosophical, and some would even say theological. But I suggest that from a strictly relative point of view, that a human is not necessarily that much more superior than a cockroach, really. As a matter of fact, you could say that the dominant species on this planet are either insects or certainly microorganisms. There's a lot more of them, and they could wipe us out at any moment, frankly. But all that said, still, if we are to really, you know, stop with this idea that we are the dominant power and that maybe there are other realms of information which are outside of ours, not necessarily even more advanced or even better than ours, just outside of ours, then we need to start focusing on how to interpret the language of those other realms. And that's why, for example, synchronicity is a very important part of life for people who are, I think, a more spiritually inclined. It's the idea that the universe is not necessarily going to crack open and tell you what's happening in English, but that the universe speaks through the language of synchronicity, that you will see connections happen that will lead you in the right direction or will push you away from the wrong direction. And so ultimately the point is, the only way that we are going to make progress is to stop treating the environment around us as if it's full of people like us that just happen to be invisible or whatever, and consider that we're dealing with a completely different form of life, whether we're talking about the OUFOs or we're talking about spiritual entities. The idea that the entire universe is a pulsating living thing and that we have to really take our nuanced knowledge and learn how to communicate with it in a variety of new ways that requires new indiscriminatory thinking.
Fascinating stuff. As this progresses, we need to touch back more often and chat about what we're finding. And I'd love to be a part of this research in any way I can with you, Bill, or whoever else. If people are interested, and you've got the ear of about 500,000 listeners right now, Josh, that are going to listen to the show and download it over the next couple of months, if there is somebody that has an engineering or a scientific background that would like to collaborate and bring something to this research, how can they reach out to you?
Well, I read every single email that comes in. I can't always respond to all of them, but if you go to joshuapwarren.com, there is no period after the P in the web address. Go to joshuapwarren.com. Scroll down. You'll find my email address there at the bottom. And I hope that everybody listening will go to the website and at very least experiment with the paracymatic sigils. It doesn't cost you any money. All this is a collective experiment. If you have an idea for a sigil, contact me, and I'm occasionally creating batches of new ones for us to experiment with. People put these things in wishing machines. People observe them directly. But all that stuff is there at joshuapwarren.com, and I hope that many of your listeners will also sign up for my free e-newsletter so I can keep you updated when I have new things available and new results to share.
Fantastic. We'll put all the links up to that, more information so you can find it all right here on Beyond the Darkness, where you've downloaded the show or listening to the show from. You should be able to see the links and follow them so that you can always keep up with the work of our guests like Joshua P. Warren and keep up to date with what's going on. Let me remind you again, there is a brand new TV series that is currently in full swing production. They are looking for you with your real life encounters with the paranormal. They want to feature you in an entire hour long segment, sharing your story. So make sure it's a good long story, not just I saw a Bigfoot walk across the street. They want to know much more. They want big stories, ghosts, aliens, cryptids, or other disputed entities. They want to know about them. You can find out more information by emailing me, dave@darknessradio.com. Just put in their TV show, and I will make sure to send you the link and information so that you can go and turn in your info for this. They need to get this done ASAP. They are currently in need of 6 powerful stories, and if that's you, contact me, dave@darknessradio.com, and we will forward that information on. Even if you're not sure, but you think you've got a good story, still email it to me, and I will get you the information to get signed up. They may end up using you for next season on the show. That's it for this week on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. Joshua P. Warren, thank you again, sir. It's been a pleasure, as always.
Hey, thank you, Dave. It's been a great conversation, and I look forward to our follow-up.
We will be doing more. You can be sure of that. We'll be back again Monday. Remember, have a safe, loving, happy weekend filled with much love and laughter. And as Joshua was just telling you about the strange synchronicities of the universe, I have a story to share with you and a message I think that finally made it through the veil to me from my mom. We'll talk about that on Parashare and Supernatural News Monday, right here on Beyond the Darkness.